Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Michelle Martin. You'll recognize her, of course, as the host of NPR's Tell Me More, which is heard here on WRVO. To quote NPR, the show's aim is to focus on the way we live, intersect, and collide in a culturally diverse world. Listeners with longer media memories will also recall that Michelle was a correspondent for ABC News, in particular ABC's Nightline program, and prior to that, she was a reporter for The Washington Post and The Wall Street Journal. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the end of April marks the fifth anniversary for Tell Me More, and so a lot of what I want to ask you about will be through the lens of reflecting back on that experience. And first of all, congratulations on that milestone.
Thank you. Thank you for noticing.
Your show, it's not only about race and ethnicity, but they are one of the principal themes. And so I was curious to know whether the show has evolved in any particular ways, anticipated or unanticipated, in terms of how you treat those topics.
It's a good question, and I appreciate it. It has evolved in a way that I absolutely did anticipate. I thought at first that it would have a very, if I can just shorthand, black-white dynamic. And I thought it would have that simply because we were kind of building on kind of an audience established by a show that preceded us, which was first the Tavis Smiley show, which was, you know, started by who else? Tavis Smiley. And then taken over by another broadcaster named Ed Gordon, and then who was succeeded by Farai Chidey and was called News and Notes, which was primarily focused on the African-American stations, many of which were housed at or kind of hosted by the HBCUs. And since we were kind of building on that, the original idea was that, you know, that would be the morning show. We would be the afternoon show. But all of that changed. I mean, for one thing, that show was broadcast from the West Coast, and it made absolutely no sense for a West Coast show to be on the in the morning and for an East Coast show to be in the afternoon. So some of that was just common sense. But I also felt that it just was sort of illogical to have two shows focused on this kind of black-white dynamic when you have the whole other American story. I mean, one of I know this is going to sound crazy. One of my secret passions is the census, because early in my career, I used to cover the Census Bureau. And so I was a sociology major, and I'm really hooked on data. And you cannot escape kind of the way the country was changing. So I always thought that we would kind of broaden our focus to a more kind of truly multicultural, multi-ethnic approach. And we've done that.
And are you trying to do things regarding the discussions of race and ethnicity that you see lacking in mainstream media outlets more generally? Could you speak a bit about that?
You know, both. In fact, I appreciate you noticing that, because we do both. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that I think we in the media ought to be honest about is that, you know, part of our job is to tell people things we think they don't already know, but part of our job is also to validate them. And that's that's part of the appeal for many people, is to tell people, I'm not crazy. You know, I did notice this. I'm not crazy. I'm not the only one who's noticed this. And so that's one reason we cover all the heritage months, you know, Black heritage, Hispanic or Latino heritage, Asian and Pacific Islanders, Native Americans. You know, these days, everybody has a week or a month for just about any subject or cause. You know, however worthy or, you know, unworthy or whatever, you can have or LGBT heritage, whatever, you know, but we cover all the heritage months, in part just because it's a way to organize our thoughts around specific groups and to open up stories and issues that are within groups that perhaps are not being surfaced. I feel the same way about religious sort of people who adhere to various religious faiths or denominations. Often, you know, all Christians don't look alike, think alike, have the same kind of worldview, even within Christianity. All Catholics don't have the same worldview, even within the same denomination. All, you know, evangelicals don't have the same view. So part of what we do is try to open up conversations that we know are going on within groups, as opposed to just conversations that are going on across groups. And I think that's some of the most interesting coverage that we do. We've done a lot of intra-Islam conversations about, you know, dynamic conversations that people are having within their community that perhaps other people are not privy to. And I think that that's one of the things that we do that I think blows up stereotypes because, well, for example, in the wake of that, you know, that terrible shooting at Fort Hood where this Muslim American psychiatrist, you know, killed you know, so many of his fellow service members and then was sort of grievously wounded himself. And there was a very rich conversation about whether or not the religion itself was promulgating, you know, racist ideas and xenophobic ideas. And to me, the most dynamic conversation was going on among Muslims. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we tapped into.
And I know you've had several discussions of the Trayvon Martin shooting in recent weeks on your program, and I was wondering if there was something, again, distinctive about your show that we can hear in the way that you've approached and dealt with that event.
Well, I think one of the most interesting conversations that we've had is with the congresswoman from the district, Representative Corrine Brown, and this terrible story has taken on, you know, kind of a black-white dynamic. And it is true that for many African Americans, this has surfaced like their worst fears about the consequences of stereotyping. And that is just absolutely true. But one of the points that Representative Brown made to us is that there are a lot of white parents in her district and white constituents in her district. She represents the district where the shooting took place, who are very disturbed by this. And she reported to us, had made diligent efforts to contact her and insist that she get involved in an oversight capacity because they felt that the authorities, their local authorities, had not addressed this issue properly. So in a situation like this, often, you know, the conversation may seem to fall along these racial lines, but very often you find when you dig into it that it isn't. I mean, while it may resonate more deeply with certain groups than others, but the fact that other people are tapped into this, they almost get disappeared.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Michelle Martin, host of NPR's Tell Me More. Well, more generally about the show, have you been pleased with what it's accomplished so far, do you think, in 5 years?
Very much so, because we are now carried on 100 stations around the country. We are carried, of course, on XM Sirius as one of our, you know, delivery platforms. I know that we have a fairly decent audience on iTunes in some markets where we are not carried on the air. And of course, we're really excited to be on WRVO. You know, we're very, very happy about that.
Well, that feeling is mutual.
You know, oh, thank you. But for people whose local stations aren't carrying us, you know, it's great to have the opportunity for them to experience us in some other way, and we know that people do. I mean, I'll just be honest with you. One of the disappointments for me is that we have also, like a lot of people in the media, gotten caught up in kind of the broader political polarization. Mm-hmm. You know, people imputing motives to us that we do not have simply because of the subjects that we cover. We've even been the subject of some kind of sort of politicking in certain markets, kind of retaliatory against certain issues that happened at NPR last year related to Juan Williams, and almost as a kind of a retaliatory move. There have been people who said, well, if he has to go, she should too, because they've sort of decided that I fit a certain profile, which I do not. And my, you know, answer, you know, the facts speak for themselves. I mean, we have a very broad range of political perspectives on the program all the time. But it irritates me. I'll just be honest. It's because I'm not a political figure. But so sort of for people are using the program at times for their own political agendas, and that kind of annoys me. But you know, my attitude is the facts speak for themselves. I mean, people who think that we don't represent a broad range of political opinion are just wrong. I mean, and the other thing I feel very strongly about is that we have, you know, people who are established thought leaders in. Who have often been overlooked by people even within their own, even within, say, the conservative media. Like we have a couple of contributors who have been longstanding, you know, important figures in the conservative movement who nobody talks to except us. And so I feel very comfortable with the range of thoughts and opinions that we're presenting.
Are there big subject areas that your show has not delved into that you'd like to see Tell Me More expand into in the future?
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things that we've always been there are three areas that I don't think we're quite where I'd like to be, and I'm not quite sure how to handle it since we only have an hour a day. If you're listening out there, I like station managers, we'd like to have another hour. The business story. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are programs that are focused very specifically on, you know, business and economics, and those are great programs, and I enjoy them. But I do think that there's an interesting kind of diversity dimension in the business world that we haven't quite figured out how to do consistently. We did a series called in connection with Diversity Inc. Diversity Inc. is a media outlet. They have a magazine and a web-based, you know, product where they talk about diversity issues within business. And we did a series with them called What Not to Say Too. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting. Things that you would never – that I personally would – I think people really say things like that? You're like, what? You know, what not to say to your Latino colleagues. What not to say to your female colleagues. What not to say to your LGBT colleagues. And we also, you know, did a – you know, the other side, what to say. Mm-hmm. Things like assuming that people speak Spanish just because they have a Latino surname or something like that. Or, you know, interrogating a woman about, you know, her reproductive plans. I mean, that kind of stuff, you think nobody does that. Yes, they do. And so that was kind of fun. But I do think that there's still a lot to say about the way we relate to each other at work. And I also think, you know, on the economy, I'd like to be more consistent. We do a lot of personal finance work, in part because we are housed on a number of stations which are on college campuses, and we think that that's important to kind of get people started off on the right foot, recognizing a lot of people didn't have that. Financial literacy was not a part of their growing up experience, so we try to offer that. And also on science. I mean, there's a terrific science, you know, program that, you know, NPR distributes, but I still feel there's more to say about some of these issues within science, and I'd like to be more consistent, you know, on that. And I'd like to kind of get away from, forgive me, I'm not trying to be, you know, flip here, but like the first black person to eat a cheesecake. I mean, that's not my thing, but something more sophisticated and nuanced in that area.
Well, I wanted to get more into your personal experiences on the show, if I could. And you talk about a lot of pretty sensitive stuff on Tell Me More, and I was wondering how you deal with the experience of feeling triggered by some of the things that you must hear. And I just want to take one example. I was listening to your barbershop discussion on the Trayvon Martin case the other day, and I got the sense as a listener that there were some things that were being said about the police that might have bothered you. But anyway, do you have a mindset or an approach about that challenge as you go into doing the program?
Well, I mean, there are certain issues that I give myself permission not to talk about because I don't feel that I can be emotionally disciplined about it. There are not many, but there are one or two. I did disclose the fact that my brother took his own life. It will be 2 years this May. Mm-hmm. And it's still a very difficult subject for me. It's an important subject. It's an important public policy subject. It's an important subject given that, you know, many times more people, twice as many people take their own lives in this country as are murdered. That's a consistent figure across time, even as the homicide rate in this country has declined dramatically in recent years. The number of people who take their own lives has remained consistent. And now we have members of the military where, you know, returning service members or people who are in theater who are, you know, overseas who for whom this is a really present issue. So I feel that we should be covering this issue. But there are times when I just can't do it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when people bring up an issue and it depends on what time of year it is. If it's a time of year that would have been special to us, you know, for my brother and me, I'll just be honest. I just say, I can't do it. But for the most part, I just think that, you know, people who work in a lot of fields are expected to have emotional discipline. I mean, doctors are human beings and they have to, you know, treat and, you know, work. Nurses, doctors, they're human beings and they have to treat people and work with people who they may not like or who have been mean to them or who may trigger things in them, and they've got to have the discipline to do it. You know, people in law enforcement should have the emotional discipline to keep their own personal feelings out of their interactions with the public. And so I don't think it's too much to ask somebody like me to have emotional discipline in dealing with issues, even if I have a personal connection to it. And if I feel that it may if a subject is something that I feel we need to talk about, but I feel like my own personal background is something that I should disclose, I do so. I mean, I'll just say, look, this is – and I mean, obviously, partly because I'm a solo host. I mean, if I were on All Things Considered where there are three hosts, I could just pass it off and say, well, I'm not going to take this when you do it. But since I'm a solo host, which I like, frankly, I just feel like I have to disclose it, I will, and I do, and people can make their own judgments. They're adults. People can make their own judgments about whether they think my judgment is affected by it. You know, my husband is an attorney who's had a number of high-profile cases, and sometimes I think it's necessary to say, well, you know, my husband had a case that had similar set of facts or whatever, and I, you know, and that's how it is. I mean, in the case you were talking about earlier, I have six members of my family who are cops, law enforcement officers, cops. We say cops at home. I think it's an okay word. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I grew up with it, so I feel that I'm not pretending to be one, but I'm not going to pretend that I don't know what I know about what that job is.
You've got a segment on your program called Can I Just Tell You? Is that a way for you to deal with some of that?
Yeah, it is, although that's one of those things that just kind of happened. You know, it wasn't planned. I mean, I actually tried. This is the truth, but I don't know if I should admit this or not. The reason we started doing those commentaries is I was 3.5 minutes late on the first show. We had to tear up our first show because some news broke over the weekend that was relevant to what we were covering. So we had to tear up the first show, and when we timed it out, we realized we were 3.5 minutes late. And I said, holy smokes, what are we going to do? And I said, I'll write something. That's the truth of that. So...
And I also wanted to know, what's the most important thing that you think you've learned from the people who've been on the show?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I think some of it has to do with the medium itself. You know, because I was in television for a lot of years before I came over to radio. And it was in newspapers before that. And one of the big things that surprised me the most when I first came into radio full-time, because, of course, I had done spots before when I was at ABC News. I had done, like, spots, you know, like 30-second spots, you know, for the newscasts on the radio, you know, particularly when I was, you know, in certain beats. But it's just how much more human people can sound. I mean, like, I remember this very clearly. But this was even before my show started, and I was training. I was at Talk of the Nation, and I was filling in for Neil Conan, that host, in part to give him some relief and also to train for my program. And there was a member of Congress that we had on whom I had interviewed a number of times when I was at ABC for Nightline, you know, for like a soundbite here and a soundbite there. And I was just amazed at how much more human he sounded, how much more accessible, how much more, frankly, intelligent. And I thought, what's happened here? Same guy. There was just something about the medium and not having to kind of spit your words out in like a 15-second, literally like a 15-second soundbite that made him sound one way, and actually being able to have a sentence and talk it through that made a real difference. So I think that the main thing I've learned is to give people enough time to talk and get their thoughts out, no matter who they are, whether they're and the other thing I have to say is that one of the things I particularly like about our show is that we don't just specialize in people who get paid to talk. I mean, one of the things we feel really strongly about is trying to provide opportunities for people to talk who aren't professional talkers, who aren't always. I mean, there have been any number of people who've been on my show who have told me, this is the first time I've ever been interviewed. This is the first time I've ever been on the radio. And I feel I think that's an important thing.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations, and my guest is Michelle Martin, host of Tell Me More. At ABC, you worked on a documentary on the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas controversy, and I was really curious to know, years on now, what you now make of that whole event, since you had a pretty close look at it before.
Well, I had had a pretty close look at it from the beginning because I was a White House correspondent when that story broke. Because I can tell you, I got a phone call from a contact of mine at the White House at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday letting me know that this was about to go. And then I very quickly called our Justice Department correspondent who also was covering the hearings so we could compare notes and figure out what we were going to do. And so I think that's still one of the most interesting stories that I've ever covered. And I'll tell you what I think about it all these years later is that it's amazing to me how little the facts matter to some people, because there's a very clear record of fact in this matter, and a lot of people just don't care. And I think they should just be honest about the fact that they just don't care. They don't care what the facts are, and they like their story better.
Was it any kind of a turning point in our country's experiences at all, looking at it now?
Or? Very much so, because I think prior to that point, a lot of people did not. First of all, one of the things that I was fascinated by, just as the experience of covering that, was how, you know, how you can be, I often find in the racial conversations, you can have people living sort of side by side who are living in completely different worlds and have completely different experiences. And one of the reasons that happens is they don't talk to each other about those experiences. They don't discuss it. They just, one person, you know, a person like this Trayvon Martin case is an example of that, where, you know, African-American parents are saying, this is something I worry about all the time, and their white neighbors and friends have never heard them say that, okay? And so that's just they're living in parallel worlds. One of the things that was fascinating to me is how men and women, even those who are married to each other, were living in parallel worlds, because I can't tell you how many males on members of Congress, my male colleagues, had no idea their wives and colleagues and friends were experiencing this kind of behavior at work, and they never talked about it. I can remember distinctly there was one member of Congress, a senator, whose wife told him that there had been other colleagues of his who had done inappropriate things, and she never told him because she didn't want to interfere with their relationship. So I think, yes, it was it certainly raised awareness for many people about the ways that people felt they could speak to and talk to women at work, and I think it changed a lot of people's attitudes about that. But as to the individuals involved, as I've said, that, you know, a lot of people, they like their story better. And they still, to this day, will bring up things that are factually incorrect. Like, for example, to this day, people will sort of insist that, oh, Anita Hill was fired from every job she'd ever had. That was factually untrue. But they don't care. They like their story better.
And let me get to the three questions now. First, what's the title of the chapter of your life you're currently living?
Squeezed. The big squeeze.
Second, what's your worst trait?
Oh, I'm so tempted to be flipped about this. I'm just, oh, dear. Impatient. Feeling that I'm running out of time.
And third,
because I'm squeezed.
And third, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
The commentaries. I would no more have thought that people would be actually interested in my point of view on things than I would have thought that, you know, I'd be suiting up to, go fly off on a spaceship. I mean, it just never in a million years occurred to me. You know, very early in my career, one of my bureau chiefs, one of my supervisors, asked me to do like a column about related to the beat that I was covering. And I said, no way. I didn't get into this business to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't have any opinions. I have nothing to say. And I'm just here to cover the facts. And, you know, those commentaries, Mike, can I just tell you commentaries of I'm not bragging. I'm really just reporting. Won an Edward R. Murrow Award. It's consistently one of my most popular features. I would never in a million years have anticipated that. I've had a column that I wrote a couple of weeks ago. I had a number of calls, emails from ministers who said that they were using it in their sermons. A rabbi friend of mine told me the same thing, that he's used my columns as the basis for his Devar Torah, which sermon. And I'm like, really? And I'm not trying to devalue my own currency here, and I'm not being falsely modest because I'm not that good. I don't know. I just think that's I'm kind of amazed by that. I don't want to overthink it because I can't figure it out. But whatever it is, I'm grateful.
That was Michelle Martin. Michelle, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.